Welcome to Talent Hub Talk. I am Ben Duncombe, and on this podcast, I will be interviewing prominent and inspirational figures from both the local ANZ and global Salesforce Ohana. Welcome to today's episode. We are doing a slightly different episode today in that we're just going to run through a number of questions that we've been asked by our audience. So we don't have a guest, and unfortunately for you, you'll just be hearing my voice, which sounds a little bit strange. So I'll apologize because I do have a bit of a cold today. And I know what you're thinking, a cold in Australia in summer, but yeah, it does happen. So yeah, really excited to be able to answer some of the questions that we get asked on a fairly regular basis. We quite often answer questions on a one-on-one basis. And so what I thought would be good is to invite our audience to ask some questions that we can then answer, but provide the details to a broader audience. So I've got quite a few questions that have been sent in, and I'll work through the ones that I think are most relevant or most useful, or the ones that I get asked most often. Hopefully it won't be the longest episode. I'll try and keep it quite on point. But obviously, if you do have any questions that come out the back of the episode, please do send them in and I'll be happy to answer. So the first question I have is, how difficult is it going to be to secure my first Salesforce role? Now, this is obviously a difficult one to answer because everyone's different. I think the main thing to focus on is what are your transferable skills? And what skills are going to be easy to transfer into the Salesforce ecosystem? And what skills do you have that employers are going to be interested in? Everyone has a set of skills that are going to be useful to an employer, but it's about how you bring them out, how you, I guess, advertise your skills and make sure people are aware of what you can do and what you're looking for. It can be really difficult to get your first role in Salesforce. I think the market is changing, and you know the market isn't necessarily so candidate short now, and it used to be a real candidate short market, but now there are plenty of candidates in the market. So it's about how can you stand out. How can you really put yourself in the shop window and attract people to you rather than you having to chase roles? So yeah, I think that's something people really need to focus on. How do they brand themselves? How do they build their personal brand? And how can they attract interest rather than just applying for roles on job boards? So yeah, how difficult is it going to be to get your first Salesforce role? It really depends on you and the activities that you do in order to approach your job search. The second question I have is, I am a web developer and looking to transition into Salesforce. Do I need to go down the admin path first? So this question came from someone that came to one of our Trailhead Tuesday events, and they're looking to transition from a web development background into Salesforce. And my answer to this is the timing is absolutely perfect. I think it's important to understand the Salesforce platform. So I would definitely look at admin trials on Trailhead and try and get a really good understanding of the fundamentals of the Salesforce platform. But I wouldn't advise that you go into an admin role necessarily, unless that's the kind of career path you want to go down. I think the market is quite ripe for web developers transitioning into the Salesforce ecosystem. And I think if you have good front-end development skills, then you're well placed to make that transition into a Salesforce developer role, especially as there's quite a big emphasis now on front-end development within the Salesforce ecosystem. So I think it's really important to have a good understanding of Salesforce and the platform, but I don't necessarily think that if you're a web developer or a developer from any technology or languages that you necessarily have to be an admin. I just think you have to have a good understanding of the platform and then use your skills that are transferable to get your first role. Another question, someone said I should go for a functional consulting role rather than an admin position as I'm from a sales background. Would you advise this? I think this one is, again, it's case by case, right? I think to get a functional consulting role, you have to have a really, really good understanding of the Salesforce platform, and you have to be able to advise and guide customers through their Salesforce journey. I think you have to have a good understanding of the Salesforce platform as an admin as well. But in my eyes, a functional consultant role would probably be harder to secure if you don't have really strong Salesforce skills already. So I have seen some people transition from a non-Salesforce background into functional consulting roles, but they tend to be working in a domain. So they might join a consulting company and specialize in working in the banking industry because they've come from a banking background, and therefore they understand that business, and it's then just picking up the Salesforce skills. So that could be an option. But yeah, the sales skills, I think, are great to have, because I think in any role, you need to be able to sell yourself, sell your solution, and sell your company or ideas. But yeah, I don't think necessarily that just because you're from a sales background, it means that being a functional consultant is going to be an easier route than becoming an admin, because I think it all comes down to your understanding of the Salesforce platform and the value you can add to customers. So yeah, hopefully that answers that one. The next question is, I am applying for roles but not getting much response. What am I doing wrong? I think the general idea of how recruiters work is we advertise roles and then we go through the job applicants and then send the best candidate from those job applicants or the best candidates to that client that are recruiting. In actual fact, I don't really advertise any of my roles. You may see them come through on email, or you might see a post on LinkedIn, but we don't actually put any of our jobs on job boards. So our placements, our success comes from really getting to know our audience and building long-term relationships with Salesforce professionals. So just applying for a role and then hoping for the best isn't always going to be the best way to go about your job search. There's a good chance the person that's advertised the role doesn't necessarily know exactly the skills that are required in the position. They're just looking for, you know, higher level. They're looking for specific buzzwords that match the job description. It could be that, you know, you're one of 200 applicants for a role, and ultimately the first person that the person speaks to sounds great for the role, so they send that person, then move on to the next opportunity they're working on. I think there's a number of reasons why people might not be getting called back about positions, but my biggest piece of advice is to really start connecting with people online, not just hiding behind job applications, but connecting with people, commenting on their content online, connecting with hiring managers, asking to meet people face-to-face, going to meetups. Most people I know that have got their first step into the Salesforce ecosystem quickly have done that through a network rather than a job application. And yeah, this market that we work in is full of people that want to help others out. So if you go to a meetup and you know, you meet someone in the Salesforce ecosystem, there's a good chance they're going to be willing to help you along your Salesforce journey. So my biggest advice is stop just focusing on job applications. Yes, do send applications, but that should not be your only route to find a Salesforce role. You need to build a network, you need to have a personal brand, and you need to connect with people that can help and are, you know, looking for people like yourself, not just sending job applications through job boards. Next question, what is the best way for me to get sponsorship for Australia? I get this question many, many times a day. I wake up and I have lots and lots of LinkedIn messages from people overseas that are looking to move to Australia. And the reality is, well, first I should say I'm not a migration agent, so I can't give too much advice around visas. But what I do see that it's becoming very, very difficult for people to get sponsorship in Australia. I feel that the desire just isn't really there from companies to go through the whole sponsorship route. It's costly, takes a long time. And yeah, I think the pool of companies that are willing to sponsor visas is very, very small. Salesforce technical people, so developers, technical architects, seem to have more success than functional resources when it comes to getting sponsorship in Australia and New Zealand. I would say New Zealand is a little bit easier to get sponsorship. There does appear to be a few more companies there, or a greater percentage of the companies there are willing to sponsor. But yeah, for functional resources, admins, functional consultants, it definitely is challenging to get sponsorship in Australia, most definitely. I often advise people that they should at least look at the permanent residency route to see if they can sponsor themselves down that route, because yeah, a lot of people don't know that that's an option. So that's something I definitely look into. And again, if you have a really specific skill set, that might be easier. So if you are a CPQ specialist, or if you are someone with really strong velocity skills, then that might make things a little easier for you. Just as an example, I'm not saying specifically those two skill sets, but having a specialism or having something that isn't readily available in the Australian market might make it a little bit easier and more attractive to companies. But it just is a bit more difficult than people expect to get sponsorship. And there just aren't that many companies that are willing to sponsor, unfortunately. But we'll always make people aware if a sponsorship role does become available, because we do want to bring more talent into the local market. This leads on nicely to the next question. Is not having local experience really a factor? It can be. It can be a factor. I think that some companies do look for people with local experience, but I would say it's more, it's not so much the fact you don't have local experience. It's probably more to do with the fact that the market here in terms of engaging with business stakeholders might be something that you haven't done before. So that might be the factor rather than just someone giving you the easy route of saying it's local experience. It might be a bit deeper than that. They're looking for someone that's worked directly with a customer face-to-face, managed stakeholders face-to-face. And that might be something you haven't done as an example. So I wouldn't necessarily say it's local experience. It's just the way that the company are looking for someone to do something here might not be something you've worked with before or something you've done before. So I think it's more of a factor in functional roles again. I think if I've never have really had any developer be told that they don't have local experience because, you know, writing a piece of code is done the same way here, if done properly, as it is overseas. So that isn't really a factor. Often, if you get that response, if you get the whole local experience response, I just push back a little bit and say specifically, what is it about my experience that's lacking? Because that's something then that you can work on. Whereas just knowing that you don't have local experience isn't really something that helps you. So if you get some feedback from a recruiter, from a customer, from a client you're not sure about, just push back and ask for a little bit more information and ask for some guidance, because, you know, without that information, it's difficult for you to learn or grow. Next question, do I need to work for a consulting partner to be a CTA? This is something that's been asked many times, but it's something that was kind of just really people expected or thought that they had to be with a consulting partner to be a CTA. And over the last few years, I think that has been changing a little bit. If we look at some of the podcasts we've done before, so there was a gentleman called Jan Ertgetz who works in Belgium. He's never really worked in consulting yet. He's a CTA. So he proves that you don't have to work for a consulting company to be a CTA. And I think now there's so much more content and there's so many more options for you if you want to go down the CTA path. Sebastian Wagner, who owns Flow Republic, he is giving people an option now to have that kind of extra guidance and training and mentoring towards their CTA without having to work under a CTA. So there's lots of options out there now. And I think that although there might be benefits to working for a consulting partner if you want to become a CTA, I don't think you have to now. I think there's other ways to go about it. But obviously, I'm not a CTA and I never will be. But I think you need to identify where your gaps are and then identify ways in which you can fill those gaps. And that might be working under a CTA. It might be working on specific projects, or it might just be having some mentoring from a CTA like Sebastian. So, I don't think you have to work for a consulting company. It might be easier, but there are definitely other routes now. Following up on that, next question, why aren't there more remote roles in Australia? Really good question. I wish I knew the answer to this. I think there's lots of remote roles in the US. I see some remote roles advertised in the UK. I think it's just a way of thinking, and I think eventually there will be more remote roles in Australia and New Zealand. As it stands, I think people are still willing to work on site. And, you know, if a company can find someone that's willing to be on site and they're comparing them to someone that's remote, they probably are going to go for the on-site consultant if the skill sets are well matched. I have placed some remote people in the past. I must admit, very few. I think really the way to approach this would be to, if you can work on site with a client and then start, you know, working towards taking a few days here and there and showing that you can add value and that the work isn't dropping and that you're still doing what's required. And then over time, ask for more and more days. That could be an option. I think it is difficult to secure a 100% remote role off the bat without proving your worth or your value. I also think it can be hard to get days working from home, let alone a fully remote role. So I would approach it in that way if at all possible. But if you can get some remote work, then you need to showcase that and show that, you know, it works and get a case study or get some recommendation from the client that you worked with so that you can use that for future opportunities to position yourself as a remote worker. So that's all the questions. I hope there was some value in there for you. We do have an episode coming up with Pip Marlowe. Hopefully you've seen that on LinkedIn. So if you have any specific questions for her, would absolutely love it if you could send those through, because I think it's a great opportunity to ask Pip some questions and find out more about her her role and her view on the Salesforce Ohana. If you've got any more questions for me, feel free to reach out and I'll do all I can to answer them. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Talent Hub Talk. If you're enjoying the podcast, we'd love it if you could subscribe and also leave a short review. We're keen for this podcast to reach as many people in the Salesforce ecosystem as possible, and your reviews will help us do that.